Hello and welcome to Fine Print, the double scrutiny of the story and its coverage with me, Amir Afrah. But first, as always, a quick check of the big print. The big print goes. Sharif barred from joining election. Sharif, rejection of nomination papers will not damage morale. Pakistan's Bhutto Sharif set demands for election keep boycott option open. PAK opposition weighs election boycott. And Bhutto Sharif sit down in Pakistan. To help us track the fine print, we're joined all the way live from London by Saqir Hussain, criminal law solicitor, human rights lawyer specializing in Pakistani legal issues. From Washington, we're joined by Azim Mian, UN bureau chief for GeoTV Pakistan. From New York, by Ehsan Al Khan, a founding member of the Pakistani Advocates for Civil and Human Rights. But first, to our first pick tonight, Associated Press, an article titled Pakistan Opposition Formulating Demands. It starts, former Prime Minister Nawaz Sharif said Tuesday that Pakistan's major opposition parties will demand the end of emergency rule and release of former Supreme Court judges as a condition for their participation in parliamentary elections. Sharif and former Prime Minister Benazir Bhutto held their first talks Monday since both returned from exile. In a show of unity, Sharif and Bhutto agreed that the elections would not be free and fair under the state of emergency that President Pervez Musharraf proclaimed a month ago. Let's go to London, where we're joined by Saqir Hussain, criminal law solicitor, human rights lawyer specializing in Pakistani legal issues. Saqir Hussain, your take on the events so far, and then we'll get into the details.
Well, as far as that sort of headline you're referring to, I mean, it's a major progress from the last 10 years when Nawaz Sharif literally was trying to finish off Benazir Bhutto politically. So I think there's some progress in terms of the non-military players sitting down together. But it also shows the desperation on their part as to sort of what strategy to adopt against a very, very strong military who's obviously entrenched in Pakistani politics, not just the military, but civilian politics. And what you were reading earlier, the fact that they've put a points proposal, it shows to me that Nawaz Sharif has been persuaded by Benazir Bhutto to soften his stance earlier, whereby he had said that he wants a complete boycott of the election. So I think there's some difference of opinion, but I think it may well have been accepted by Nawaz Sharif that the civilian political parties may not necessarily hold all the cards, so they have to play their sort of take the steps very carefully. And I think as far as the People's Party is concerned, there's been a suggestion that they regret what happened in 1985, where they boycotted the polls and felt a new stream of politicians came up who were promoted by the military. And of course, Nawaz Sharif is one of them. And that may well be the fear, thinking that if we leave the field open, there will be others who will come in and that these politicians may be forgotten.
Now a look at the paper, another snippet of this paper, which pretty much explains the recent state of affairs in Pakistan. It goes, since he declared, that is General Musharraf back then, declared emergency rule on November the 3rd, Musharraf has filled the Supreme Court with loyalists and jailed hundreds of human rights workers, civil activists, and lawyers. Most have since been released, and he has promised to lift the emergency on December the 16th, about 3 weeks ahead of parliamentary elections set for January the 8th. Musharraf retired as army chief and took the oath as a civilian president last week. At his inauguration, he said that there would be a level playing field in the elections for both Sharif and Bhutto. Since coming home last week, after 8 years in exile, Sharif has emerged as Musharraf's most vociferous opponent. He has called Musharraf's presidency illegal and refuses to deal with the newly retired Army General. Election officials on Monday rejected Sharif's candidacy for the elections because he was convicted in two cases stemming from a 1999 military coup in which current President Pervez Musharraf overthrew his government. Sharif's politician brother also had his candidacy rejected and faced possible arrest over murder charges dating back to 1998. Hassan Ullah Khan in New York. Well, I hope this snippet sheds a lot of light for our viewers on the recent events in Pakistan. I'd like to have your take on these latest twists and turns in tumultuous politics in Pakistan on the ground.
Yes. I strongly believe that I myself been an activist in Pakistan from a very early childhood, and we have seen the martial laws, and this one was nothing surprise. Actually, it was an addition to the already existing martial law regime that Musharraf, General Musharraf, imposed an emergency, and he's like ultimate power, and he has captured. He has not only suspended the constitution, but he's occupying the country, and he's doing whatever he wants. He has tortured so many civilians, which include the civil society representatives, from attorneys, journalists, students, and whosoever will talk about democracy and for the elections and justice. They are being tortured, they are being thrown in prison, and there's no law, I mean, over there. And especially on the Sharif's situation, I think it's, although I'm not a big fan of Nawaz Sharif, but I think it's a discriminatory policy that he has invited, on one hand, some of their lackeys of this Musharraf regime were here recently in New York, and they were saying that we welcome all the politicians to participate in the elections, but on the other hand, they have invited them into the country, and now they have disqualified them, saying they are involved in criminal charges, and this is something very ridiculous that. There are so many others. Those are involved in they are charged with the criminal charges like corruption and others. But this treatment is especially for the Sharif, Nawaz Sharif and Shahbaz Sharif, which is another very strange. That what is going on over there? On one hand you're saying that you want all the politicians to participate and you want to start the process, and on the other hand you have put a ban because Nawaz Sharif is taking the position that they will not participate in this election, which is under the emergency situation. They will not participate in the elections. Those are conducted unless you release all the political detainees, you release all the judges, and you restore all the judges, lift this PCO, and there should be restoration of 73 constitution.
That's pretty much
that constitution,
right? That is pretty much what Charter of Demands is asking for. The declaration by both opposition leaders, Benazir Bhutto and Nawaz Sharif. Let's go to International Herald Tribune, bringing an article from the Associated Press titled "Opposition Leaders Nearing Agreements on Terms for Joining Pakistan Elections." And it starts, Pakistan's opposition parties neared agreement on Wednesday on joint demands for President Pervez Musharraf in return for calling off a boycott that could spoil the legitimacy of parliamentary elections next month, an official said. Sahir Hussain, here's a very interesting politics in Pakistan on the ground. Three arch nemesis of one another, if you will. Sharif, Nawaz Sharif, Benazir Bhutto, and Musharraf all on the stage right now, one kicking the other out at some point in time in Pakistan. Now, of course, we had Musharraf going all the way to Saudi Arabia, asking the Saudi government not to have Sharif back in Pakistan, something he refused to let happen back in September the 9th when Sharif's plane stopped on just the runway of the airport in Pakistan for just a few hours, and he was deported back to Saudi Arabia. But this time around, he is also injected and thrust upon Musharraf by Saudis, if you will, and driven to Islamabad and then Lahore by a Mercedes provided by the Saudis. Now, how do you see this very interesting state of affairs, which is rare and unique in a way?
Well, I think the interesting bit about Nawaz Sharif coming into fray from Saudi Arabia pressure, it seems that Benazir Bhutto is seen probably far too secular by the religious lobby. And maybe Nawaz Sharif is seen as somebody who has in the past had good relationships with the religious parties, and perhaps it's to counter that there's a secular, sort of completely new liberal sort of aspects of Benazir Bhutto. That's one side. But on the other side, what we're talking about, the boycotting of the elections and in terms of banning the Sharif brothers from participating in the elections, that's equally quite interesting. What it seems is that the military, who are quite astute players at dividing the civilian political class in Pakistan, have thrown the gauntlet, and really it may well be a sort of bargaining tool with the Sharif brothers and saying, look, we will allow your opponents, your previous enemies, some say in the national development, whereas we'll completely exclude you. And this is where it's a classic divide and rule policy here. And it depends on how smartly and how sort of, intelligent both the leadership of the Muslim League, Nawaz Sharif group, and the Benazir Bhutto are in seeing what the military tactics are. But on previous form, they have been easily sort of divided from each other. So I think by the military now going for a banning of the Sharif brothers, it may well be sending a message, look, we can completely exclude you, we'll let the other civilian politicians participate, and so play that sort of card. And so I think it's a long way off before the International Herald Tribune's assessment that they're working towards a boycott. The boycott is a long way off yet.
Hassan Allah Khan, I'd like to have your take here in this boycott, because it's a serious thing. Now, on the one hand, we had this talk of a deal between Benazir Bhutto and Musharraf a few months earlier in Abu Dhabi, and after that, her landing back in Pakistan, dropping of charges against her. And now we have Nawaz Sharif thrust into the argument. Now, we had papers covering this saying, well, this was basically a Saudi factor because of both Musharraf and Benazir Bhutto's support for secular Islam, or secularism as opposed to Islam itself, what the West calls fundamental Islam or Islamism, whatever the terms they have for it. Now, they say, well, Saudi factor here involved, they entail this bringing of Islam into the equation. Now, how do you see this Islam factor in here?
Well, I think if we step a little back, I think this melodrama should stop, immediately. Musharraf regime is playing Islam and secularism, and he himself, this regime has been supporting the religious extremists all around, and the history shows, the history especially in Pakistan, the religious extremist groups were created, harbored, and sponsored by the military regimes, whether it was General Zia-ul Haq or it was General Pervez Musharraf. They were supported and harbored by the military regime and were created by them. And now they are playing this card of secularism and so-called, openness, which is like an absurd. People in Pakistan, let's talk about, the General Musharraf himself, who has broken the constitution, and according to the Article 6 of Pakistani constitution, he has committed a high treason crime. Why the discussion is converted on these political components, despite himself to be, you know, to be discussed, that he should be charged with high treason, and then this regime should be stepped down, and there should be an interim government which should held an election. It was the first time in the history of Pakistan that the civil society came out, which included the attorneys, students, and NGOs. So this is the first time in the history of Pakistan that middle class and secular and middle class really came out under the, I would say, the command leadership of Justice Iftikhar Chaudhry, who took the initiative. And that's how people are, for the first time, people are mobilized. They came out on the street. And now this fear has been created that now, I mean, the religious extremists would be in power. If we are not here, this only the Musharraf regime is taking that kind of position and responsibility, that it is only we, the army, who can control them. It's all this is a melodrama, and it should be stopped, you know.
But how so? Let's go to Los Angeles Times, an article titled "Bhutto Sharif Sit Down in Pakistan." And here is the picture of the two. Former Prime Minister Nawaz Sharif and Benazir Bhutto met for the first time at Bhutto's Islamabad home since returning from exile. A longtime political enemies said their parties would set benchmarks for measuring the January 8th election's fairness. Now, the article starts by saying Pakistan's two main opposition rivals met Monday for the first time since both returned from their years in exile, accusing President Pervez Musharraf of plotting to fix the January 8th vote and vowing to muster a people power movement that would take to the streets to challenge any election they deem unfair. But Sahir Hussain, here, they're not on level ground, none of them. Now, we have Musharraf an advanced pawn, so to speak, because last week he shed his uniform and then he was sworn in as president. The other two, we have one, Nawaz Sharif, who has been disqualified for running as anything because of all those charges of corruption, hijacking a plane back in 1999 when Musharraf, after he landed, had this coup against him and ousted him. And then we have Benazir Bhutto, well, who's qualified, she's going to run. And basically, there were reports that, all right, Musharraf is happy Nawaz Sharif is back somehow because he thinks Nawaz Sharif's campaign would only dent Benazir Bhutto's campaign, would take votes out of that, and would take that big face of a horrid opposition away from Benazir Bhutto. Your comments.
I think there is a lot of sort of gerrymandering going on here, because the aim of the exercise is to legitimize the rule of Musharraf, whether he's a general or a retired or etc., whatever he is to legitimize that, and certainly legitimize what's happened since the martial law was imposed. Nevertheless, I mean, the wider angle here is that to bring in, whether it's Nawaz Sharif or whether it's Benazir Bhutto, to really the support the Western government's goals vis-a-vis Pakistan. Now, that obviously means sending 100,000 troops within its own territory to sort of a war that cannot be won, and a war that's also very, very unpopular, not just in the military, but also within a civilian sort of a public life. And whether it's Nawaz Sharif, whether it's Benazir Bhutto, they will try to sort of bring some form of legitimacy. And of course they have to. They try the military angle, but that hasn't worked. They will try some legitimacy. And I think some sort of inducements will be offered to both the Sharif camp and Benazir Bhutto camp at the behest, negotiated with the help of the British and the Americans, so that three parties can sit together and continue with the West sort of agenda of the war on terror. It's not really necessarily the interest of Pakistan. The people of Pakistan have clearly shown, through the leadership of the attorneys, the human rights activists, certainly no extremists. You know, I mean, these are the secular liberals. They have shown that what the government has been doing has not been in the interest of Pakistan, and they've turned against it. And now those people have been sidelined. And it's interesting to note that the politicians, they've all been released, yet the former Chief Justice and the leader of the lawyers are still yet to be released. That says a lot as to where the real fear, who Dilma Sharif really fears. It's not Sharif, it's not Benazir Bhutto, it's actually the people within the legal establishment who have a genuine principle, the separation of powers, the accountability of the executive. That's what they're fighting for, and that is something that has resonated with the people of Pakistan. And General Musharraf has been defeated early on this year, and he thinks that he could be defeated again if the legal community is allowed with the leaders again. Whereas Benazir Bhutto and Nawaz Sharif, I'm afraid it'll be business as usual.
The article goes on to say, sitting side by side at a news conference, Benazir Bhutto and Nawaz Sharif, both former premiers, said that major opposition parties would set out their conditions for what would constitute free and fair elections. The move would allow the opposition to begin organizing for mass protests against Musharraf, though the two leaders still do not agree on whether any protests should be held before votes are counted or afterward. Bhutto said the street demonstrations could be modeled on the peaceful 2004 Orange Revolution that overturned what was widely seen as a fixed vote in Ukraine. Mass protests against a president who has used the army to gain and hold office signals that January's election may not ensure the smooth transition of democracy. Musharraf needs to pacify critics at home and in the Bush administration. Now, Senator Khan, the question of protests and all of that is, well, once again, let's go to the level ground here between Benazir Bhutto and Nawaz Sharif. Well, Benazir Bhutto already safe as far as elections are concerned, and Nawaz Sharif not even allowed to run. So do you see protests coming once Benazir Bhutto secures those votes in Congress, or no? She says, well, I'm sorry, devil take the hindmost.
Well, I think this is the best interest of our nation, and both of them should understand that under the Musharraf regime and under these conditions under which this regime, Musharraf, is holding the elections, it is going to damage whatever movement was built so far, which was a very courageous step of the civil society of Pakistan, and it will be crushed again. And I think this is the best interest of all the political factions, especially these two big political factions. They should boycott the election, and people are ready. I've been directly talking to several people. I've been talking to attorneys, journalists. I've been talking to human rights activists and students. I talked to several students last few days. People are willing to come out on the street if these situations prevail, and people are willing to stand up. It is the only leadership which needs to guide them, which needs to take the leading role and direct them towards the real direction of the real democracy.
All right, we have to leave it there for now. We'll be back after a few moments with what the people want, another article on what really the people want inside Pakistan. Aside from the fumble rig of politics between the three key players and enemies, Musharraf, Nawaz Sharif, and Benazir Bhutto. Don't go away. We're back with Fine Print discussing the tumultuous state of affairs in Pakistan. Joining us to find the elusive print, we're joined from London by Saghir Hussain, criminal law solicitor, human rights lawyer specializing in Pakistani legal issues. From New York, we're joined by Asanullah Khan, founding member of the Pakistani Advocates for Civil and Human Rights. But as we promised, what people want in Pakistan, an article with International Herald, a Tribune, and a picture of people on the ground in Pakistan, a factor not much talked about. In Pakistan's villages, it's the economy, Musharraf, a pun on it's the economy, stupid, that we have in America. In a recent interview, President Pervez Musharraf challenged Western journalists to journey to the villages of Pakistan and gauge public opinion there. The people, and here's a quote, the people who vote are these people on the streets in the villages, Musharraf said, recommending a trip to Punjab, the province that holds 55% of the Pakistani population. Please go around and ask them, what do they think? Well, let's go to Sagheer Hossain. Sagheer, before I read snippets of this article and see what this article has to say about what people in Punjab or elsewhere in Pakistan think, I'd like to have your thoughts. What are the issues for the people? Three candidates, all of them charged with corruption, so on and so forth. Lund, your list of corruption, including Musharraf himself. So what do they care about? Sagheer Hossain.
I lost you for a second. It's quite interesting what Musharraf has said, and I think he has a good point. The reality is that the Pakistani political leadership, that's a civilian political leadership, is quite disconnected from the ordinary people. And the ordinary people's, you know, hearts and minds haven't really been won over. That's not to say that the military is the best provider of those people's needs. It has to be a rule of law, has to be a civilian, democratic sort of a representative government, which obviously will be more concerned and accountable to the ordinary people. But it has to be said, both Nawaz Sharif and Benazir Bhutto have spent a lot of time and effort lobbying Washington and London and Europe rather than their own people. And, they are one of the reasons why there's issues about whether we should have a boycott or not, is that these political leaders are concerned whether the ordinary people of Pakistan will genuinely rise on their behalf if they make the call. Their bluff could be called, and I think Musharraf knows that. Musharraf knows that these people, yes, when elections come, people will vote, there'll be block voting, etc. But in reality, the whoever's in power, whether it's Nawaz Sharif, whether it's Benazir Bhutto or Musharraf, only people have yet to be convinced that their life will be any different, whoever's in power. And a large amount of that blame not only goes to the military, but Nawaz Sharif and Benazir Bhutto have to share that. They've had opportunities whilst they've been in power, and they've not really been able to impress the ordinary people of Pakistan with this, saying that their interests would be better represented with a civilian government.
Now, the article goes on, Westerners overestimate, and it's quoting President Musharraf, Westerners overestimate the popularity of former Prime Minister Benazir Bhutto, the main opposition leader, he said, because they only meet human rights activists in Pakistan's cities. And he scoffed at Bhutto's claim that her party would have trounced his party in a nationwide election. He said, quote, don't let anyone misguide you, form your opinions, go to the streets and find out, Musharraf said, find the common man and ask him or her about her statements. In random interviews, the article says, in this farming village in northern Punjab, the vast majority of Pakistanis criticized Musharraf's government, saying prices have soared during his tenure. Some said they supported Bhutto, but most expressed a deep cynicism about whether any leader would ever help Pakistan's poor. And here is a very telling statement from a villager here, in which says, Musharraf has announced he will end poverty, Hussein says. It seems he will end the poor. Hasanullah Khan.
Yeah, I agree with Sagheer that though it will be a beginning of the political process, but I think, so far the dilemma, the most important issue of Pakistani average people, living in Pakistan, those are, I think, 90% of the whole population are far, far below the poverty line. And among them are peasants, among them are industrial workers, among them are, very, very low wage earners and unemployed. And there's a very small middle class, lower middle class, and then a little, very minor percentage of those feudal lords and those big industrialists. I think the best solution is not being discussed yet, which is the proportionate representation of the people those are from the very poor and lower class doesn't have any representation, even from any popular political factions has not they has not come up with the with the representation from the real poor and working class. So that those issues are really need to be addressed. You know, until and unless those issues are not addressed, I think we will keep doing, you know, all these practices. And this one, I mean, starting with these existing political factions, those are People's Party and Muslim League and others, I think it will be just a start of the political process. And it should be there should be a condition that they should also adopt you know, the proportionate representation from different walks of life, so that there should be a real representation and there should be equal opportunity for all people. 75% of the people, those are living in the rural areas, are mostly ignorant. Their majority of them would not go to school, or would go to, even if they go to school, they would go like on a very primary level. And I think people are being exploited, you know, because of their ignorance, because of they are not being provided the equal opportunity. On the other hand, you know, the pattern which most of our political factions, or the army, all they are taking advice. We are a colony of the United States. We've been taking advice from the White House, from the Washington. And I think the pattern over here, I mean, if we are taking that pattern, here it is a huge middle class which is being represented by the middle class itself. Most of the politicians here are from the middle class. So why can't we practice all that in Pakistan?
That's exactly what the article has to say. Here's another interesting piece that I would love to read for the viewers as well, which says, while city dwellers, here's a comparison between city dwellers and villagers. While city dwellers complained that Musharraf's dismissal of the Supreme Court, suspension of the Constitution, and shuttering of independent media were illegal, villagers complained that they had driven up prices. Now, it's giving examples of prices. And further down, it says, most villages vote for whomever their landlords tell them to, they said. Pakistani political scientists have long blamed the feudal system for stalling the development of democracy in Pakistan. Winning elections depends on creating an alliance among the landlords, often by spreading government favors, not by meeting the needs of average voters. This is very interesting in Pakistan. And we have, let's go to boycott and religious groups. Now, we have another article, this time from Bloomberg, that says Pakistan religious group may split over vote boycott. So, Sahir Hossein, one question was economy for the villagers, for the city dwellers, so a little bit different. Now, let's take a look at religion inside Pakistan, now, especially Western Pakistan, Waziristan, and those unruly regions the United States wants to really somehow rein in Pakistan. That's why they've been giving Musharraf some $10 billion since September 11th to rein in these regions. But Musharraf himself is losing his own clout within his own party because of the very same Islam factor, the Islam Muslim League Party of Pakistan. And Nawaz Sharif right now is representing those Muslims, if you will, as opposed to the seculars. I'd like to have your take here.
Yeah, I think what the article is talking about is the alliance between the religious parties. And it's two main players in those religious coalition. Qazi Hussein, which belongs to the Jamaat Islami, which is the old Akhwan Muslim Brotherhood sort of faction, and you got Maulana Fazlur Rahman from the Northwest Frontier. Now, Qazi Hussein is far more an astute politician and understands the sort of overall structure, whereas Maulana Fazlur Rahman is a bit of a comical, naive figure who it's felt can be manipulated quite easily. And therefore, there is a split developed between Qazi Hussein and Maulana Fazlur Rahman as to whether there ought to be a boycott of the elections. And it's almost like a comical proportions, because they're both coalition partners making statements against each other now in the press regularly. It may be a lot to do with the fact that Maulana Fazlur Rahman has a regular seat close to a very sensitive area with the Afghan border, and therefore has much closer relationship with the intelligence services and the Pakistani sort of military establishment, and therefore may feel it difficult to sort of disassociate himself or his political party from that. Whereas the Qazi Hussein Ahmad, the Jamaat-e-Islami people, are looking at the bigger picture, thinking that the military has really sold the Pakistani people down the river in this war on terror, and generally, and therefore need to be held to account. And if it means making an alliance with the other secular parties, so be it, to do the boycott. But certainly that is quite a good illustration of how divided all the opponents of Musharraf are in Pakistan.
Let's go to Asia Times, an article titled U.S. on Pakistan's campaign trail. Well, something we don't hear much. We're just hearing words like Benazir Bhutto, Nawaz Sharif, and Musharraf, but we're not hearing much about U.S., U.K., and other countries involved here. The article says United States Ambassador to Pakistan, Ann Patterson, made a direct appearance at Pakistan's political stage on Monday with a strong call for all political parties to participate in the national election scheduled for January the 8th. She personally met with several politicians, including Nawaz Sharif, and insisted that he take part in the polls. Former Premier Sharif recently returned from years in exile. And it further down says, this open intervention by senior U.S. diplomat follows prolonged backroom efforts by the George W. Bush administration to dictate Pakistan's strategic and domestic political issues, as well as matters related to foreign policy such as Kashmir, to bring Islamabad in line with the U.S.-led war on terror and its regional policy on Iran and Afghanistan for the remaining year or so of the Bush's term. Ehsanullah Khan, from the very beginning this November 3rd, state of emergency, November the 2nd, that was a Friday before the Saturday of emergency rule in Pakistan. We had U.S. CENTCOM Chief Admiral Fallon inside Pakistan. The day before that, we had Musharraf on the phone with Rice and very high-ranking U.S. officials, of course, also with officials from other countries, including U.K. And all the while, we've had conversations. We had Negrapane in Pakistan camping out, basically, with the agenda that we don't know much about. And analysts believe, point by point, they were directed the Pakistani leaders as what to do. Do you agree with this, A? And B, well, where do you find U.S. in all of this and others, Atal, U.K. included?
Well, if you look at the history, I think Pakistan was created as a secular country as per Muhammad Ali Jinnah. And Pakistan, Muslims were by then in subcontinent were in minority, and their rights were being violated by both bigger factions and the ruling elite Britishers. That was the major reason. And now, I mean, this role of religious mullahs and religious clerics and extremism was strongly emerged and created and supported and emerged by the West, including U.S. administrations by then. And it has been going on for about last four decades, these mullahs were harbored, they were supported, they were heavily funded. Alone, Hikmat Yar received, according to our information, about $5 billion in that time period. So, I mean, that role was strongly supported and emerged by the American administrations by themselves. And now, although still the average people in Pakistan are very very secular and they are Muslims, but they are not jihadis, they are not extremists. No mom want his son to become a jihadi or an extremist or want to be killed or died. So this is the situation, this is the background, and on which I think you raised that the U.S. politicians and several other, diplomats from UK, they are going to see these politicians, except US ambassador has seen all the politicians. She's going to their homes, but she has not visited her own countrymen, woman, Madia Benjamin, who is our leader. She stood up and she raised against that violation, and she went all the way there, and now she was arrested yesterday too, and she's being deported. And it is a collaboration of Bush administration, the Musharraf administration, nothing else. And I think people should realize that all this is a melodrama which is going on, and they had funded billions of dollars for Western part, and I think those from out of those billions of dollars, couple of millions of dollars were needed for the human development in Waziristan. Couple of millions of dollars were needed for the better water and providing people their employment. So these were the solutions, and I think those are not being addressed. And on the other hand, people are being killed, they are being bombed. All this is going on, and this is creating a hatred. This is creating another kind of chaos. So which really need to be listened and addressed, and people really need to understand that, you know, what the real issue is. You know, there's no such thing which is being publicized all over the media, and average people want, you know, peace of life. Average people want to live peacefully. They want to work hard. They are hardworking people, and they want to survive. They want to meet their basic needs. So these issues should really be addressed.
Sagheer Hossain, one huge question here on the lips of many: which is the best scenario as far as the White House is concerned? Now, we have the three on the ground. We have an election slated for January the 8th. We have already Nawaz Sharif not safe because he's been disqualified by the Election Commission of Pakistan. We have Benazir Bhutto and Nawaz Sharif both coming up with this charter of demands and saying we will otherwise boycott the elections, which again would cast the entire elections in a different shadow. And on the other hand, we have Pervez Musharraf shedding his uniform and somehow in a safe zone as far as Washington is concerned. And then we have analysts saying Musharraf, with spent fuel as he is for Washington because of public sentiments against him, is still the U.S.'s best pick. But what do you think the best scenario out of all of this for Washington?
Well, as far as Washington is concerned, I think their scenario is it's really just like Israel is, and Egypt are becoming, and the Pakistan is completely sort of disregards its own personal sovereignty, and it did Washington's bidding in the 1980s at the cost, serious cost to the internal strife in Pakistan with communist Russia. And equally now, where there's war on terror, obviously Washington wants his own agenda. And the sad situation is this, that the Americans now no longer hide their sort of attempts to control what happens in Pakistan. And that must be a really embarrassing situation for the proud Pakistanis to think that, hang on, a population of 165 million, supposedly a nuclear power, is ruled by some sort of upstart ambassador who's got close to George Bush, is suddenly telling the Pakistani people how to run his affairs. I mean, that is now is completely exposed. And I think that's the kind of situations where the liberal, the secular, the human rights activists are suddenly thinking, yes, Pakistan as a state, hasn't it achieved its true independence? Has it gone past the past colonization whereby, you know, you had the foreign military occupying a country? Now you just have an ambassador who is just telling you how to run your affairs. I think it's that embarrassment which has woken up the emerging lower to middle classes in Pakistan. And as far as the religious angle is concerned, it's ironic that the although the religious parties are castigated regularly, it's really always been the religious factions which have taken the pride of defending the borders of Pakistan, whether it's to do with the war over Kashmir with India or whether it's to do with the war with communist Russia. It's always been the religious factions which have been at the forefront, whether it's on behalf of the Pakistani military, whether it's on behalf of Saudi Arabia, whether it's on behalf of the United States. They have been at the forefront at trying to pursue what they is seen at the time as the interests of the Pakistani of Pakistan, and it's really sad that these days, you know, everybody when they talk about Pakistan talk about mad mullahs, extremists, etc., etc., as if everybody in the religious establishment in Pakistan is a madman, and that is something that's shameful. I think as Pakistanis, they should be standing up for the religious classes, for the religious people. And all the sort of the bad press that's been given to them by the Western secular-minded people in their war against political Islam or Islam itself, it should be defended. And therefore, what should really be at stake is the interest of Pakistan, not what will impress Washington or London by going around singing the secular mantras, saying, "Look, you know, these extremists, they're not one of us. They're nothing to do with us, and we're really all secular liberals, and therefore, you know, religion is not that important to us." That is almost like embarrassing and psychopathic to Washington and London.
Now, very briefly, Ehsanullah Khan. Now, let's see, well, they have come up with a charter of demands, Bhutto and Nawaz Sharif. On the other hand, we have a Chaudhry Shajad Hussain, according to our article, International Herald Tribune, chairman of the ruling Pakistan Muslim League, dismissing the opposition demands as unrealistic. The charter of demands already. In fact, the two alliances have nothing to attract people and are therefore raising non-issues, he was quoted as saying, by the state-run Associated Press of Pakistan News Agency. Now, how do you see the end game of all of this with all the facts that we have on the ground and we discussed during this program?
Well, I think you mentioned Chaudhry Shujaat Hussain and the Muslim League, which is working with this current military regime, Musharraf, under the Musharraf command. They are known lackeys and cronies, and they have the history of, I mean, and we have the history of these kind of lackeys. Those are trying to, diffuse, if ever, you know, the people's voice is raised. They are always with the establishment, with the power, which has no connection with the people. The establishment is only taking advice from the U.S. ambassador or, you know, on the back, U.S. From Washington. So it is a big irony which need to be addressed. And I think now the electronic media has brought a lot of awareness among the people, and people, average people, are being aware that what is happening, what we are going through, and people are being educated about it. And now is the time for all of these factions to realize that, you know, before it is a big movement and big bloodshed or any kind of civil war, there should be peace, and
all
people
right.
should sit together. And
unfortunately, that's about all the time.
Address those issues.
Right. That's about all the time we had for this edition of Fine Printer. Thanks to Osagir Hussain, criminal law solicitor, human rights lawyer specializing in Pakistan. We're also joined from New York by Ehsanullah Khan, founding member of the Pakistani Advocates for Civil and Human Rights. And, of course, our thanks to our viewers for joining us. Always watch out for the fine prints. With me, I'm Yarfan.